Welcome to Mission Critical with Lance Chung, the show where we explore the ideas, strategies, and people shaping the future. For the next four episodes, I'm so excited to be bringing you inside the 2025 Glory Sports Summit, where we brought together Canada's top sports leaders to tackle the biggest questions in the game. From the 2026 FIFA World Cup to the rise of women's sports and more, these are the conversations at the intersection of sport, culture, and impact. Enjoy. In recent years, Toronto has made bold moves that signal its evolution into a true global sports capital, from the launch of the PWHL and AFC Toronto to the announcement of a WNBA expansion team and the NHL's renewed focus on international competition through the Four Nations Face-Off. And in the next 2 years, as we all know, that momentum will reach a new peak as the city prepares to host World Cup matches in 2026. Arguably the most significant international sporting event in our city and Canada's history. Our next conversation brings together leaders building Toronto's sports future from every angle. Major league expansion, global partnerships, grassroots development, and equity-driven advocacy. Together, they'll explore what it means to turn a city into a global sports hub, not just by hosting the world, but by ensuring that storytelling, access, investment, and community are at the heart of its growth. This is about how Toronto can create a legacy that lasts well beyond the final whistle. With that in mind, I'd like to welcome our panelists and our moderator today. So, Teresa Resch is the inaugural president of the Toronto Temple, the first WNBA franchise outside of the USA, which will begin play in the 2026 season. Teresa has been a leader in basketball development at the global scale for over 20 years, and for 11 seasons, she was also a senior leader at the Toronto Raptors, bringing basketball to the forefront of Canadian sports. So please put your hands together for Teresa. Yes. Next, we have Soraya Tinker. Soraya is a former professional hockey player who has sparked change, pushes limits, breaks barriers, and has created a more equitable future in hockey. She is the executive director of Black Girl Hockey Club Canada and the PWHL's diversity, equity, and inclusion manager, as well as a broadcaster, analyst, host, and influencer for CBC Sports. A round of applause for Soraya. Next, we have Kyle McMahon, who is the Senior Vice President of Global Business Development at the NHL. In his role, Kyle is responsible for generating revenue through the development of strategic partnership and the sale of NHL-controlled media, helping the league on its path to upwards of $6 billion in annual revenues. Recently, he led sales efforts for the breakthrough and highly successful Four Nations Face-Off tournament, creating over 30 brand partnerships across the globe in under 10 months. Give Kyle some love, please. And, of course, we all know Diana. She was just here on stage. Please welcome back to the stage Diana Matheson. And finally, our incredible moderator, Allison Walker. Allison is a sports, media, and entertainment executive with extensive experience across amateur and pro sports, esports, media production, and partnerships. In 2024, she joined global leading sports marketing agency Wasserman as senior vice president to lead their Canadian brands and properties. So a big round of applause for Allison, who will be leading our conversation. Over to you, Allison.
All right. Check, check. You can hear me. Thank you, Lance. And thank you all for coming. This is a really nice room, and the Glory team has done an incredible job getting us all ready for it. So thanks for being here. All right, global sports cities and a global sports nation. This is really more about the sport on the field of play. This is about all the things that come together. Diana's spoken about some of it. Sharon and the group spoke about it on the first panel. There's so much more to sport than obviously the product that we love to watch. And it's about the impact of sport. We've heard about impact a little bit on the first two panels, and that's what I love about these topics. Lance and Charlotte have been really intentional about how do we talk about things that are a little bit different than what we hear about at other conferences. So naturally, I went and looked on ChatGPT to understand what is a top global sports city, and what are the criteria that make it that? Naturally, international event hosting, great segue from our FIFA World Cup panel and what's coming next. The Olympics, of course, scale and frequency, world championships, infrastructure. So we heard a bit about that, quality and number of stadiums, arenas, venues. Teresa certainly deeply involved in OVO. Professional teams, women's and men's, and a mix of media mentions, social engagement, stakeholder perception from federations, media, and influencers. And so quick shout out, just shout it out. What do you think? The top five across multiple different reports is generally pretty consistent. Shout out what you think a top global sports city is. Good one. Okay. Number one, consistently, Paris. Maybe recency bias, but Paris is up there. Paris, LA, New York, London, Madrid are the five that kept coming back. Madrid probably because of Real Madrid. I'm sure there's some statistical analysis you could do on this. Number 6 to 10, some balance of Lausanne, obviously IOC, Manchester, Barcelona, Miami, Washington, D.C., Tokyo, Budapest, Melbourne. Really interesting. No Toronto. However, I would say taking stock at home, we have a number of Canadian cities that certainly have established themselves from a pro team, women's and men's perspective, stadiums, arenas, practice facilities, major event hosting, All-Stars, Pan-Ams, World Juniors, Women's FIFA World Cup, and of course championship rings. We've got a lot of them here and in other cities. But there's something more in a sports city and nation, something almost intangible that transcends sport itself. A feeling, our own type of fandom, building community, inclusivity, and belonging. And that's what we're here to talk about today. So let's start with you, T. I stole one of her employees yesterday, and we actually went golfing. And I only say that because women never make time to golf. And we did some golfing and business. And Teresa had FOMO. Yeah. T, you're uniquely positioned to answer this question. I'm very lucky to be a friend of Teresa's, or at least I consider her a friend, as a relatively new
mutual,
Canadian.
Mutual
friendship. You're a Torontonian. You're a Canadian now. You're an NBA champion and now leading our first WNBA franchise, as we all know. How will building this WNBA team help solidify Toronto as a global leading sports city? Get us on that top 10, please. And more broadly, as Canada, as a sports nation.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a great intro. I learned a lot from that, actually. And I think why those cities, you know, why Toronto's not there is, like, it's really robust across everything. It's not one thing. So the tempo starting is not going to catapult us there, but it's all these things that are happening. And when you think about, you know, global sports city, a lot of it is about representation. So the fact that there's now women professional sports here, I think catapult us to start. You know, you look at
Diana,
the WNBA, you look at PWHL, you know, you can't be considered a global sports city if you only have one gender represented on the playing field. So it was great to see. Actually, I was living here when we did Canada hosted the Women's World Cup, which was really, really cool, which we should just call it the World Cup, right?
We
shouldn't have to
qualify
that as women's, but anyways, so I think that's one piece. And then the other piece I think that's really gonna catapult us is just like leaning into how diverse this country is. I think I heard earlier that there's over, in Toronto alone, I think there's over 200 languages spoken. And like, you just can't find that anywhere else in the world. And it's something that we're leaning into. There's a reason why we're Canada's team. We're not just, we're not just the Toronto Tempo, but that is our name. But we are gonna represent all of Canada. We have marketing territory rights across the entire country. We plan to play regular season games across, not just in Toronto, but other locations as well. And it's something that I think will contribute to all those little steps that can make us global. I can't
Amazing.
Wait to get there. And we know that the fan base is extremely diverse. And we know that this fan base for WNBA in Canada is different than any other fan base that currently exists for all the professional sports teams. So we can't wait to welcome those people in. And a quarter of all our fans we know are new Canadians. So then that's going to open the floodgates for all the places that those people have come from.
So great. And speaking of all the little pieces that build to a global leading sports nation, beautiful, you're heading to an All-Star this weekend, and you can just bring one right back to Toronto. Thank you very much. We'll host the All-Star. Or to Canada. Anywhere in Canada.
We'll try to play a game first, And then we'll see about hosting the All-Star.
You got a few things to do, but get on that. Diana, I hope I got the stat right, but you often talk about being at least, I'll call it top three. I think I put second best women's sports nation in the world, which I love, thanks to many of the folks right here. An incredible statement in just a few years. This is literally lights just turned on. How did we do that, do you think? And what will we need to build the long-term success for women's sports in our cities and in our nation as a whole?
Yeah, and I say that because, you know, soccer, I'm very fortunate. We were a global game. I get to travel around the world. So you get to get that, you know, 10,000-foot outside-in perspective of Canada. A lot better perspective that way. And the reality is, I touched on it before, you know, our attitudes culturally and in the way we engage in sport, we support women and girls in sport. We are still a decade ahead of the countries you would think we are side by side on, like England, Germany, etc. Those are also the countries where men have been playing soccer a lot longer and men still play soccer first. And they're just coming around to the idea that women play football. Like the Women's Euros, the last one, Women's Euros is going on right now, the last one England won, that was the big moment where they were like, oh, maybe this women's football is a thing. That was us in 2012. So we're ahead of the curve. And, you know, everywhere has women's soccer, so a lot of countries have women's professional soccer leagues, but they don't have the WNBA everywhere, and they don't have the PWHL. You know, they maybe have handball or something, but nowhere else in the world do they have three world-class women's professional sport leagues. And in a country where we engage in sport, we support women and girls in sport, and we have the business of sport. Like, soccer, again, there's European football, there's all these things, it's very... We play the game, we love the game, it grew up through grassroots and now it's really big, but the commercialization and the business of sport in North America is very different, and we're very good at that in Canada because all our executives have been doing it a long time now. So we're in this mix where we're brand new at women's professional sport, we're in early years, but we're world class at it. And you know, you've seen it. We have the women's athletes. We didn't have women's professional sport leagues before, but before this, every 2 years, you'd watch an Olympics, and 60 to 80% of those medals were being won by women. We are world-class at women's sport, and we're just getting started. What we need to do to keep it building is two things. Infrastructure, we don't have enough sport infrastructure. For me, soccer infrastructure in Canada, there's a massive gap in every city in this country for soccer fields, indoor soccer fields. We have no mid-sized stadiums to play in. The countries we're comparing ourselves with that are sort of like us, a Denmark, a Sweden, Australia, they all have a mid-sized soccer stadium for every 500,000 people of population. We have one for every 8 million people of population. We have nowhere to play. So invest in infrastructure. And I think, too, I would love where, you know, again, we're in this time where it's elbows up. We've got a government now that's looking at nation-building projects. How do we invest in our economy? Women's professional sport is a new industry. It's a growth industry. It's going to keep growing the next two decades. How are we as a country actually fueling that fire? And how are we looking at that to make sure we're creating not just what we're creating on our own, but making sure it's even bigger?
Yeah, awesome. Kyle, speaking of nation building, we love a best on best competition, so thank you for doing all the work to bring that back, especially when the stakes are for national pride. Interestingly enough, when we think about All-Stars, and we've seen an evolution of All-Star games, because when it doesn't really count, the players aren't that into it, but when it's national pride, it matters. So Four Nations Face-Off, we all watched it, obviously. It was a tremendous success, but for more reasons than just the hockey. Why do you think that international tournament was so important, and how do you think it contributed to Canada's position as a global sports nation, knowing that it was played both in Montreal and Boston, but how is that building Canada as a sport nation?
I think the history of hockey in this country is part of the history of hockey is part of the Canadian experience. I think... while we can love all sport, and all sports help define when there's championships or there's these moments, they help define a nation. I think there's these moments that are so deeply rooted, the 72 Summit Series, and there's a lot of parallels to that. I wasn't alive, but I read about it in school, and I learned about it, and they still talk about it 53 years later. It's a moment to say, wow, like this is democracy against communism, and the first look behind the Iron Curtain, and this galvanizing moment for a country that could punch above its weight. And as a kid growing up, that wasn't mine, but 87, the Canada Cup at Cops Coliseum that now our friends at OVG have just rebranded, that Canada Cup defined my childhood of what hockey could be and what a nation could roll around. Got so excited with Nagano for the first time NHL players would play at the Olympics, finally a best-on-best tournament where you could play for a gold medal. No NHL player had ever had the chance to really play for a gold medal. And you had this, and then it didn't work the first year, right? And that made Salt Lake City so much better in 2002. Turin, a disaster, which sparked the home win and the golden goal. And we have all this research that shows from our new Canadians that their first interaction with the sport are around these moments, that golden goal was the catalyst to fandom in the sport of the NHL sport and NHL fandom for 15 years. And we'd gone 10 without a tournament. We finished Sochi, we had planned to go to Beijing, we were never gonna go to Pyeongchang because the organizing committee didn't really have room for us or wanna help us get over there. Beijing couldn't happen because of COVID, and all of a sudden it'd been a decade. And we had veteran players, star players, Connor McDavid, had never put a Canadian team jersey on until after he turned pro. His last at the World Juniors, Austin Matthews, the Tkachuk brothers for USA, had never played together. So there was this pent-up excitement that was back to say, okay, who's gonna define sort of hockey supremacy in this moment? The four greatest nations we have in men's hockey, Sweden, Finland, Canada, US, the tournament was set to be big. And then you add in this topspin, this extra sort of motivation that we haven't had since 72 and in those Canada-US rivalries all through the early 80s. And that just helped redefine things. This was no longer just a sport. It wasn't something that was like, oh, is Canada still got this thing that they're really good at and we're better than everybody else. It really felt like personal. And I know from my own experiences talking to friends who aren't hockey fans that would talk about how like, we can't lose this game. This is like too important. There was this extra meaning to it. And so I think you can't plan for that, but I mean, we announced this tournament 10 months before the US election. This had nothing to do with anything other than we wanted to get back in the business of driving fandom to the NHL through the international best on best platform. Four nations will lead into World Cup 28, World Cup 32, and an ongoing participation in the biggest sporting event in the world, the Winter Olympics. That's gonna be the pathway that opens up fandom. Our country has ballooned recently. We're over 40 billion, mostly coming from countries that have never seen ice hockey. How do we get people to care? We have to get people to care by giving them a place where they can put one foot in Canada and have this process of acculturation around these moments that are about the Maple Leaf. And sport does that. Sport on a national level does that. So we're very committed. Our Players Association is very committed. Ownership down is locked into saying these are going to be evergreen, regular, two-year cycles between the Olympics and World Cups. And we're going to draft the business off of that, both here in Canada domestically, but certainly in the U.S. and the awakening that Four Nations face-off had to the U.S. sports nation. You cannot underrepresent how powerful that tournament was to the hockey fandom of America. And we'll get to Europe in a little bit, but that's the next wave too, and anchoring international competitions around best on best to drive overall fandom is how we're gonna put the accelerant on. Like, I'm the old league here, we're 107 years old, but we for years talked about when I first got there, we're like a 90-ish year old startup. Like, the whole business keeps evolving. You have to really think differently and go from the ground up. So we take notes from what the WNBA is doing, what the Super League's doing, what PW is doing, and how are we gonna try to grow together. We actually see sports as not a zero sum, at least on the business side, that there's the whole commercial model of sport in Canada has grown because of entrants that we've had recently.
So Kyle just said it took 100 years to build the NHL. Soroya, it's taken only 10 to 15 years to build the PWHL into what it is. That's not a fair dig, but it's more about the PW. And speaking of best on best, I mean, I've seen so many Scepters games, and the product on the ice is incredible, which is not what I'm going to ask you about, but it is. As Lance said, you've been at the forefront of this evolution of hockey on the ice and a force for change, which is a lot to say. I think there are a lot of people in this room who have been a force for change. Why does equity matter in hockey? And even building on some of what Kyle was talking about, there's so many moments that transcend hockey, but that the NHL has been so instrumental in bringing to all of us. Why does equity matter, and why are all communities, including those that are underrepresented, important to building global sports cities? Teresa touched on it a bit.
Yeah, well, first off, I mean, thanks to the Glory team, I showed up running late, and I think it's the perfect day to run late because I'm here with three Kenyan girls. We got Caroline, Hanad, and Chumbana. And they've flown all the way from Kenya to experience Canadian hockey. So I've obviously seen a lot of the growth, but we're getting there in inviting Africa into the realm. I mean, Europe, obviously, as well. But we've seen the growth along the way. But, I mean, having them here to experience that Canadian experience, obviously, I'm Canadian. I've worn their jersey. I have a silver medal. And I love a Canada-US rivalry, but I can't wait. And they wouldn't support us. They would call us out. And I do think our fan base is a little different than the NHL's. But, I mean, we know hockey is such an expensive sport. For them to have equipment, for them to have access to an arena. In Kenya, they've got one ice rink. It's one-third of the size of an NHL rink. So that access needs to go further than just Canada and the U.S. If we want hockey to be an international sport, we have to actually truly invest in it in that way. I think of soccer. I mean, everybody knows soccer. I think hockey is still, I mean, it's not always familiar in Africa, but if we can bring people in and give them that access, then hockey is going to grow, and we can actually make sure hockey's for everybody. But I see Donovan in the audience here. He says, diversity is a superpower, and it truly is. I've learned from these girls. I've learned what they need in Kenya, what they need access-wise, what they need equipment-wise, and it's good for us to know here because us in Canada, I mean, we have everything. We take for granted the every arena we have on every single corner of this city. So it's important for hockey to be equitable because it's not going to grow if we don't. And that's not what we want for hockey. We want it to be truly for everyone. But it starts with the access. Starts with it welcoming people in. It starts with having a welcoming atmosphere at games and in arena. PWHL, we have our Unity Games, celebrating Black History Month, Pride. We're not going to stop those despite this social atmosphere. So hockey needs to be equitable because it's not going to grow. It's going to diminish if we go the opposite way.
Absolutely. That's a great answer. Teresa, speaking of community, I love how you talked about using sport to connect people. Obviously, Kyle just talked about it. It seems like an obvious statement, but it's really important as you're building not just a franchise, but a league in this country. What does building community around basketball in this city and country actually look like as you guys are sitting in your boardrooms? How will you accomplish that? Well, interestingly enough, you're attracting international players to come and play in Canada. How do you square those two things?
It's so funny. I'm just thinking about Kenya and one ice rink in the whole country. Mm. And a trip I took to India in 2008. It was my first international trip when I worked at the league office. And we did a Basketball Without Borders camp. And there was one wooden basketball court in the entire country. Mm-hmm. That was in 2008. And now there's some, they've invested in the infrastructure and, you know, now a lot of it is like sport you happen upon. Like, yes, we're very privileged here to be able to decide what sports we want to play and understand. But like for a lot of people in this world, it's what's adjacent. It's what's convenient. And that's what we're talking about, infrastructure. Like my guess is you ladies probably live somewhat close to that arena. And like that's how you're exposed to hockey. So anyways, this is not the question you asked.
No,
at all. That's just what I was
totally
thinking about.
Agree.
But I think that's kind of what you're alluding to is like, how do you bring people into this community where it might not be convenient? Like, yeah. how do you broaden that reach so that somebody who has maybe been and never exposed to the sport, never had access to a court, can still fall in love with this sport and be a fan? And I think a big part of that is connection and community. I'm going to mess this up. I don't even know who said it, but I heard someone say that basically for women, you need community to compete, whereas for men, you compete and build community. So, and that resonated with me greatly because I think about the women that I've played on teams with. I think about my college volleyball team and how we had to kind of grow together and build this community before we could all compete as a team. That made us stronger. But then I'd go see these guys go play pickup basketball, and they'd be winning. You know, they'd run five runs in a row, and I'd ask one of them, like, "Oh, who are you playing with?" They're like, "I'm not sure. Blue shirt guy." You know, because they compete, and then that builds community. So, I mean, that's a big general stereotype, but all that to say, the tempo is really leaning into that building of community. And one of the things we want to make sure that we're doing is we're building an environment where everybody feels like they are welcomed, and they also feel like they can show up as themselves. We launched last month a campaign called Together We Win. If you didn't sign the pledge, you still can. But it's a pledge that Toronto's youth poet laureate, Shahada Jack, wrote. It's very moving. If you haven't seen it, go to our website. And it basically talks about how everybody is welcome and everybody belongs in this space. And ultimately, that's what we want to create. And it's going to be played before every single game, just like the anthems, because that's what we want to create. And it's something that we're going to, you know, pledge our fan base to also be creators of it with us. Because if it's just the team doing that, then it will never work. We all have to take on that responsibility. So anyways, I think I really started off track, but I wanted to go there.
I think if we're having this conversation in the next couple of years, adding to the criteria that I went to ChatGPT, the criteria of what builds a global sports city or nation will be around these initiatives that actually were intentionally taken, that created inclusivity for all and created growth in sport. And I think it's just incredible what you're doing. So thank you.
Yeah, and I do think that it's one of those things where for the longest time, especially with the Raptors, we felt that as being the only team outside of the U.S. was like this huge disadvantage. And I feel like we're in a point in time in society and where we are at the world, especially with different genders, with the growth of women's basketball, especially because most of those women play overseas. So going overseas or having a different experience is something they're used to. Canada is a really intriguing market for them. So in some ways, I actually think that is our superpower. And we're the first team in the league outside of the U.S., so we're different no matter what, and I think it's something that we're going to embrace. So time will tell. We have a lot to learn still, but I'm looking forward to really, like, leaning into that and, you know, building that community.
Right? Yeah, it's amazing. We can't wait to be along for the ride. So, Kyle, speaking of international communities, because sometimes building community at home is very internal focused and sometimes it's very external focused. Hockey is clearly in the hearts and minds of Canadians, women's and men's. And you're very focused on all called Untapped. I know you guys have done a ton in Europe, but you've got a ton of players that come from Europe. Talk a little bit about how some of the work that you're doing and planning on doing in Europe, where 30% of your players, some 30% come from. How does your work in Europe help grow community in hockey?
Look, it's no secret. Yeah, 31% of our players representing 17 countries outside of Canada and the U.S. So we are one of the more global of the big four sports from a player participation standpoint. Our brand outside of North America has trailed. We need to do more to elevate our brand, the NHL brand of ice hockey, into the sports conversation. So while the whole world is an opportunity, we're focusing where the earliest wins can be, namely Europe itself. We're strongest Eastern Bloc. If we ever figure out things and can open business again in Russia, we'll get there. That's going to be a big boon for us. But Nordic, Eastern Bloc, and then into bigger commercial markets where we need more development. So working with the Deutsche League and Germany, adding into France. Like, so what are we trying to do? And it's a full revamp of how we go to market. And starts with, you know, changing our broadcast deals, changing our schedule to play more games on Saturday, Sunday afternoons in North America that lead into European primetime, making sure those primetime games are available on lower tier cable affiliates or over the air if you can get it, so that it's accessible to people, programming content specifically for that market, not just in language, but leveraging a German lens to highlight reel and package and building that piece out. It's using generative AI to drive real, like, content that can get out with immediacy into the markets that matter and leaning into social on top of on-the-ground events. So we've been playing games over there, but we've been bombing in, playing a game and bombing out. What you're going to start to see is much more of a global fan tour that we've already established that will elevate the fan experience and allow people to engage around a hockey story, leveraging the summer where we've got those 30% of guys back in Europe and bringing them into events and activations, playing more games, but also scheduling in a way that gives access to more and takes it off like a very high tier. We also know that watching a 2.5-hour live broadcast is not the primary way people consume in sports. So making sure that our social handles are engaged and following, and that we're actually, again, giving a reason to care about our brand of hockey, driven by the fact that your country's best stars are playing here, and how do we lean into the local but national mm-hmm. side of the equation.
So you planned the Olympics in Europe nicely, given this strategy, next February.
Perfect. You know, you gotta make your own luck.
And turns out Milano Cortina is not a bad place to visit. So
I hear it's going to be great. I hope
gorgeous.
I get the ticket.
You'll see Jackie Ryan over there in the COC.
Yep.
Amazing. Diana, Toronto and Vancouver are two of the 16 host cities. There's Sharon. Hosting the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Canada hosted in 2015 World Cup. Interestingly enough, and I had to go back and remember, we did not host in Toronto, which is so interesting. Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten that, which I don't know if that's good or bad or otherwise. But how do we, I don't want to say ensure, I want to say build on, take advantage of the moment, the impact of next year's massive events, and we'll focus on Canada, three countries, but how do we use that to continue to propel, I'll say, the conversation, the commercialization, the growth of women's soccer in the NSL in Canada? You've spoken about infrastructure, but what else?
Yeah, I'll start with infrastructure again, because those two cities, obviously, as you said, they have an NSL team, Vancouver Rise, AFC Toronto. And as I alluded to earlier, there's not enough venues, soccer stadiums, for us to be playing in. So all our teams are sharing venues. We're second or third or fourth tenant. They're all wrong size venues. They're too small or they're too big. So right now, Toronto and Vancouver don't have a home. Like, we're renting stadiums, but they don't have a permanent stadium home. And it was, I think Sharon mentioned it earlier, the under 20 men's World Cup that came here back in 2007, I think. We'd hosted a youth women's World Cup, and that we did that well, so that led to us hosting a youth men's World Cup, and we did that well, and that led to hosting the women's World Cup, and we did that well, and that's led to us hosting this men's World Cup. But the 2007 edition of the men's World Cup, it resulted in the building of BMO Stadium, and it was majority public dollars that mm-hmm. from the city, from the province and federal that built that stadium. It was being built for the under 20 men's World Cup, and it was being built because MLSE was bidding for Toronto FC. Mm-hmm. So the chance to get a men's professional soccer team, and we got ourselves a stadium built. So let's fast forward to 2025. We've got the biggest single sport sporting event in the world coming to two cities. It is the biggest World Cup that FIFA has ever put on. I think people need to understand that. There's, 128 games or something? They've expanded, so there's 64 teams, there's 120-something games. They're in three countries, they're in all these host cities. So everyone that is putting on the World Cup right now is at full capacity. It's like $1 billion of public money is being built in our country to invest in this games, which is going to have a huge impact on sport and soccer in this country. I think most Canadians are sleeping on how big this is going to be. It's going to be massive. It's going to be positive. But I would say everyone is at capacity for just putting on this tournament, that no one's really had capacity to say what is the physical on-the-ground infrastructure legacy that we're leaving in this country when we leave, aside from upgrades to BMO. That mm-hmm. helps men's professional sport. It doesn't help the rest of the sporting community. So what are we doing to leave a permanent home for Vancouver Rise? What are we doing to leave a permanent home for AFC Toronto? And I would say we have owners in both those markets that are keen to work with the cities to leave those homes. Toronto, I'll tell you right now, the goal would be Lamport Stadium. Either redo the turf, put in some temporary stands, or redevelop the stadium. If we have AFC Toronto in Lamport Stadium, it will be one of the best women's soccer venues in the world.
Absolutely.
And can anyone remember when the Wolfpack played there? Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So that's the goal. And we're pushing as hard as we can, but we need more people to be noisy about it to try and get that over the line. And we need the same public support and public dollars that got BMO built, that got BC Place built.
Absolutely.
Than that we do for women's professional legacy. Soccer around the 2026 World Cup.
Big event legacy. Amazing. Too soon to suggest going up to Rogers Stadium at Downsview?
Lamport. I prefer Lamport.
Okay.
Let's do Lamport.
Two blocks from the Wasserman office, so
is it?
I like
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah. You're biased.
Just let's under the tracks from the PWHL and the Tempo's home.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Coca-Cola Coliseum.
Lamport is, in. You mean?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Lamport?
We're all in on west of the city.
Yeah. Lamport's right there, yeah.
Perfect. Women's professional sport.
Somebody should
district.
Buy some land and build a sports bar right
women,
now.
Let's go. Uh-huh. I'm in. If someone's doing that, Anastasia, you're in to invest in a women's sports bar, if anyone's doing that, by the way.
All right. I'm Liberty Village,
that's three,
women's
that's three investors. In our women's sport district, buy now before prices go up.
Yeah. Done. Okay, we'll meet afterwards.
Okay, we'll meet you after the drinks. Yeah.
We'll meet after. Soraya, and I'm looking for my hook, but this might be the last formal question. But so speaking of building on legacy, building new leagues, PW is still relatively young, and you're really focused on the importance of long-lasting, inclusive sport ecosystems. Explain to us what that means and what are the things that go into that and how do we do that?
Yeah, I think from a PWHL perspective, we specifically, right year one, we wanted to know what the community wanted. And the community in all six of our markets, obviously we've got eight now, but we spent 3-5 months meeting with all of the organizations, Hockey Equality, Ice Hockey in Harlem, Black Girl Hockey Club, them all, finding out what they need and what was going on in their organizations and how we could change things for them. So we will be releasing it soon. I've been told I'm allowed to talk about it, but our three social pillars are inclusivity, women's equity, and youth access and retention. So youth access and retention, we know girls are dropping out of sport at 14, at twice the rate boys are. So with that, we want to make sure that we have that access. So we're building our impact arena. It's resources. It's going to be content. It's going to be connection for those young girls, 14 to 16, that are dropping out of hockey. Meanwhile, some of them are receiving D1 scholarships, but they just don't want to play anymore because they're bored in sport, or they don't feel welcome in their community or within hockey itself. Inclusivity, as I mentioned before, I mean, if we weren't inclusive, we quite literally wouldn't have a fan base. So I think we have to continue with our Unity Games. We'll continue to celebrate Pride. We'll continue to celebrate Black History Month, despite some people not wanting us to. And then women's equity. I mean, every day at the PW, every day at the WNBA, NSL, I mean, is Women's History, Women's Equity Month we're celebrating. So I think it was really diving in and making sure that we're listening to what the community needs. And that's how we develop those three social pillars, and now that's going to lead into how we are going to have something like the WNBA Changemakers, or how we implement those in our community. But yeah.
So just one last follow-on question to that. Obviously, there's been so much discourse about DEI in the U.S., the current administration, the name, the framework, the program, the everything, the essence. How do... In your day job, because you're thinking about this all the time, you know, we're in Canada, we're not perfect here, but slightly different. How do you keep going beyond just, I don't know if it's ignoring that, like how do you keep going? Because PWHL is Canadian and American.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, definitely when everything was going on, I was receiving questions asking if I still had a job. And yes, of course, I think we're really focusing on the inclusivity part. I think there's big fear around DEI and that whole terminology. So I think honing in on the inclusivity part. We need to make sure that everybody feels welcome, and that's inclusive to BIPOC individuals, white individuals, everyone. So I think when we focus more just on the inclusivity, we don't have to get the flack that you get from when you speak about DEI and all that terminology that is currently being canceled.
It's so incredibly ironic that you are focused on inclusivity when you're being excluded. it's crazy. Okay, so we are going to wrap this one with some rapid fire questions. So everyone gets one answer to each. It's just easy. We'll go in this order so we don't get confused, starting with T all the way down. We go green first, we go black last.
I always have to go first.
We go green first, we go black last. Green to brown, so we're always going this way. All right, In one word, what defines a global sports city? T.
Inclusivity.
Ooh, yeah, you can't repeat. You can't repeat.
Yes, I'm glad I got
it. One word, what defines a global sports city?
Diversity.
Oh.
Passion.
Oh, I like that.
Infrastructure.
Nice. Yep.
There we
That's actually what
if nothing else, you're consistent.
Thanks. Yeah.
Anastasia should have said that. Which city, other than your own, the one you grew up in or the one that became your own, do you admire most as a sports hub?
Ooh. Well, you just eliminated mine. I was going to say Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's really under the radar.
Okay,
but it has
because you don't live there today.
I don't live, yeah. Okay. But it's really under the radar, but it's one of the top, I think, 10 or 15 media markets as all the big four. And
there are actually two cities. It's kind of cheat because you are Minneapolis-St.
Well,
Paul.
Well, I'll just say Minneapolis then because okay. everyone's there except for hockey. Okay. Hockey's in St. Paul. But they haven't won in a long time. That's the only other thing.
Mm, not winners, but still goals. Yep. I always found that confusing because you're like, am I in Minneapolis-St. Paul? And they're like Minneapolis-St. Paul. I'm like, but they're separate. Yep. Okay. What city?
I'm going to say New York. I love the support that the Liberty gets. Obviously, Madison Square Garden is unforgettable
awesome.
Anytime
That's
you get
answer.
To watch a game there. But I do want a little more support for our New York PW team there. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Kyle?
I got a soft spot for Boston.
Yes.
I think they just... There's no aspiration to their stars. They're just, they're from Boston, you're from Boston, and there's this, like, we're all together, one of the
so team. So true. I just told you I went to see the Jays play at Fenway last weekend. Yeah. Amazing.
So, Bostonians. Funny aside, I was with Andrew Ferentz, who played in five NHL cities, won the Cup in 2011. I asked him the same, like, do you get recognized? What's the best fandom? He said, hands down, love Edmonton, love all the places
Boston.
I played. Boston.
So cool.
Only place where you will still, to this day, he's like, I was in India, and some guy with a Massachusetts accent just screams out, Ferentz! And he's like,
That's
respect
awesome.
For being there. Like, he always he'll be a Bruin. So Boston's
so
got a good,
Boston.
Good vibe.
Yeah, this is what we call rapid fire when we're extroverts. We're not very rapid. Diana.
Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Oh!
I'll go...
You're biased.
In case anyone is wondering where it is. On the amateur sports side, it's the Olympian capital of Canada. Like, there are more Olympians per capita there than any other city in Canada. And it is because of the Olympic Games that were there so many
legacy.
Years ago. There is still a living, breathing legacy of sport infrastructure and high-performance centers that's still being used today by so many active athletes.
Amazing.
Infrastructure.
Amazing.
Infrastructure, yeah. One might say.
We're going to go back to one-word answers. If you could host one event in your city next year, no budget limits, one sporting event, what would it be?
I think we're doing it in the World Cup, but I'll...
Fair.
Cricket.
Oh.
Whatever the biggest cricket thing is. It's like...
Okay.
I need to learn more about it, but it's global.
Okay. Great.
Oh, gosh.
It's called a try, I think.
I mean, I would love for a PWHL All-Star.
Good one. Kyle?
I would love to either see a Rugby World Cup aspiration, or I want to see the lake used more, so like a Sail GP race on
that
Lake Ontario.
That one might come true in 2027
in
Toronto Harbor.
I heard.
Yeah, Sail GP. All right, Diana?
I'm not going to be creative at all. I'm going to go either a Northern Super League Championship.
Oh, that might happen
Spoiler.
This year.
We don't know. Or perhaps the single biggest single sport event in the world, the FIFA World Cup. Check
Woo!
It out.
Okay, I think that's happening next year.
Can I have it back?
Yeah, you can have it back.
I want to see the NHL finals here.
Oh!
Good.
I know somebody might have something to say about
that. Was that an ooh or a boo?
That was just an ah.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
Are we being hooked? I got more. You're good? Okay, we're going to go questions. Okay, last question is, let's go with, what's one bold bet you'd make about the future of sport in Canada? Teresa.
I bet in 10 years' time, women's sports value in this city will be equal or maybe even beyond men's sports value. Yeah. 10 years, we got 10 years.
I bet in 6 years there's going to be a WNBA, three more WNBA teams in Canada.
Oh.
Wow.
I bet in 15 years we bring another Summer Olympics to Canada.
Nice. Mm.
What was our time frame again?
Anything.
Bold bet.
Okay. And we're going realistic based off Teresa's as well. So new competition, the Champions League format for women in our region is the W Champions Cup. So a Canadian club wins W Champions Cup.
Yes.
Ooh. That's good.
All right. Do we have any audience questions? We'd love some questions. Hi, how are you?
So one thing ChatGPT didn't mention, I don't think, is having big brand builders. And we have four great brand builders on stage, from Tempo to PWHL to Four Nations to NSL. So liking the rapid fire format, can you summarize your brand in a word or a single feeling?
Great question statement. Thank you.
My CMO is going to be so disappointed in me.
Oh.
Tempo. Heartbeat.
Well done. Yeah. That's a good answer.
I'm going to have to say inclusive. I think that we thrive off of our inclusivity we have in our league.
Hardworking.
I'm not the brand person. I'm just going to...
You can do it. You can do it.
Yours was good. What's that? Grit.
Grit.
I'm taking audience suggestions.
It's like the place is right.
If your husband or wife is in the audience, they're allowed to answer for you.
Okay. It's like humble but world class.
Mm-hmm.
Grit.
Swagger. It's good. Any other questions? Hello, Anastasia. We'll do that, and then we'll do that, and then we'll wrap it up.
I'm so sorry to be political, but the question of how Toronto becomes a world-class sports city, I honestly think it already is. I'm stunned that we're not higher. Where did we rank in that list, you know?
I wasn't unranked. Beyond 10, there were just many great cities.
So given just how quickly the world has changed and so much of what we love and consume is directly tied to the United States, like, what's the next big step to make this actually happen and to see the needle move on this conversation?
I'll start by answering, ChatGPT, that was a bit of tongue-in-cheek because, just so everyone knows, it's not always right and doesn't have all the context, so good one. What ChatGPT does is goes and aggregates what's on the web, and so it came up with all the studies. So it is actually more about the studies than ChatGPT. And the criteria are what they are. How do they weight the criteria? How do they look at inclusivity? I don't think those things are involved yet. So I think maybe one of the things is, let's look beyond just the classic, how many pro teams do you have? How much have you hosted? Let's look at real human metrics. So that's my part answer to that. But I think anyone else, please answer the, like, you know, how does Toronto get to be the top 10? I mean, that was kind of the point of this. And I think it's a bit of what everyone said.
I mean, I think part of it is what you said. It's media. Mm-hmm. Why are we not part of some of those things? And I think sometimes kind of at the Raptors, but now at the W as well, with the Tempo, is when we're talking about where we're pitching stories, it shouldn't just be the sports news channels, linear channels in Canada. Like, we have to think beyond that, and we have to think about who we're telling our stories to and the outlets that we're talking to, mainly non-linear and not in Canada and not in America, because that's actually the future. That's our audience. That's how we're going to grow. So I think a lot of it is storytelling outside of those, like, very traditional channels.
We don't need a list. We just define it. I think Toronto, I don't represent Toronto. I represent the league across the world. But Toronto, if it's not a global sports city, then what is? There's more people from more parts. This is the globe in one city, and there's no other place in the world like it. If it's not on the map for being a global sports city, then that person just doesn't know what they're talking about. So just, I think you just take a page from the orange guy down south, and you just say it is, and it is because you say it.
Drop the mic. We're going to wrap it there. Thank you so much for your participation and engaging in this awesome conversation. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Alex. A round of applause.